Is God calling you to ministry? It's time to multiply your capacity for ministry with an affordable degree. The Bachelor of Arts in Christian Ministry at Wesley Biblical Seminary is the degree for you. When God called you to ministry, He called you to preparation. This degree is the education that you need to put all the pieces together for an amazing life of ministry. You will graduate with a confidence for ministry that is backed up by your competence in the scriptures, theology, and ministry. Come learn with a trusted seminary that will help you become a faithful leader. Learn more at wbs.edu.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Live radio show here today on Monday, July the 15th, 2024. Not a lot to talk about, so we're going to play a lot of music today because just an uneventful news day. Of course, that was ultimate sarcasm because we are wall-to-wall with news.
Dramatic.
Yes, yes.
Things happened over the weekend, as most of our listeners.
And this morning.
Yes.
Too. So Tim Wildman here with Ed Battagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Hey, good morning, Tim.
Good morning, Fred Jackson.
Good morning, sir.
And joining us in studio is Chuck Bond. Chuck is Assistant Director of Security Operations here at American Family Association. Good morning, Chuck.
Good morning, gentlemen.
We're going to invited Chuck in to talk about what took place on Saturday with the attempted assassination of former President Trump. Because you have a lot of years of experience in police work, and what are those? For
the- well, 30, 35 years of experience. I've had the opportunity to serve in law enforcement, and some of my focus has been as a protective security specialist with contracting with the Department of State, providing mobile security in high-threat situations and security for our U.S. dignitaries.
So we want to talk to you about what happened Saturday from a police / law enforcement perspective.
Yes, sir.
But before we do that, Fred, the big news this morning is what?
Breaking news this morning out of Florida, a federal judge there has dismissed the Trump classified documents case. Many people saying this was the one that was perhaps left the president most vulnerable legally. But the judge in that case this morning, U.S. District Judge Eileen Cannon, saying that in her opinion, and it was a 93-page opinion, she said the special counsel in that case was appointed unconstitutionally. And I'll just read a little bit of it here.
Oh, read all 93 pages.
The framers gave Congress a pivotal role in the appointment of principal and inferior officers. The role cannot be usurped by the executive branch or diffused elsewhere. In other words, she accepted the arguments from Trump's lawyers that the special counsel, Jack Smith in this case, was appointed by the administration, the executive, and Congress has to be involved with these appointments. They have to fund it. And she found problems with all of that. And so she has dismissed this case, the special documents. This is the documents found at Mar-a-Lago, a Trump residence.
This is interesting because I had not... Abraham Hamilton III, we were in a meeting with him this morning. Abe, of course, is host of the Hamilton Corner in the afternoons here, 5 to 6 o'clock Central Time, and he's a constitutional lawyer. And so basically what he said was what Judge Cannon, the federal judge in this case, said, was that she is not dealing... This has nothing to do with the, quote, merits of the case, mm-hmm. Okay? This is her saying, and after it was explained to me, and I agree with it, that the Office of the Special Prosecutor is an extra constitutional office of the federal government. And if the federal government under the Justice Department is going to prosecute somebody, in this case, Trump, then you can't farm it out. You have to have a U.S. attorney or some other official that's accountable within inside the Justice Department? Am I explaining it right?
I think it has to. Now, I have not read the ruling from Judge Eileen Cannon, but I think the main point, as I have understood it this morning, and again, this is breaking news, that Congress has to be involved in this because Congress has the constitutional authority to appoint, right there in Article 1, to appoint judges and adjunct positions. And so now I do not know whether or not this means, Cannon's ruling, that the executive branch can no longer appoint special prosecutors. I don't know.
Well, it's her opinion.
Right.
And she's a federal judge. So, I mean, there may be another federal judge that disagrees with that somewhere.
It's kind of strange. I think it's good that after the Supreme Court ruling in the Chevron case saying, listen, Congress has a job, a constitutional job to do in overseeing what we, you know, call these alphabet organizations. Congress has to oversee that. Congress has to pass laws.
Yes.
You can't let, in other words, you have to follow constitutional duties. It almost sounds like Judge Cannon is kind of saying the same thing.
Right.
Listen, the Constitution does not allow the executive branch to infringe on congressional authority under the Constitution.
Yes. Also, and then we'll move on to what happened Saturday. But the big news this morning is that the federal judge in the documents case in Florida has dismissed the case because she says the special prosecutor's office is unconstitutional. And if you guys remember back, we've had these special prosecutors. I don't know how many situations we've had those in, but we remember. But the one that was so egregious to me was when Robert Mueller, the former FBI director, was appointed by, who is he appointed by to investigate Trump? Anyway, who was he appointed by? Was it Jeff Sessions?
Yeah, the new attorney general under President Trump, Jeff Sessions, recused himself, and then a body, a group of lawyers
at the FBI,
who we are told had
the Justice Department.
Democrat Party leanings, they appointed Mr. Mueller.
Right. So Jeff Sessions recused himself, and of course that's when he and Trump went sideways. But what I was pointing out, the most egregious part of this, that's when Mueller, special prosecutor, seemingly had unlimited resources to go after Trump on the Russia, and then he hired a bunch of Clinton supporting lawyers.
17 lawyers
to do that. And I'm going like, this is not fair. And this is not, do the American the taxpayer not have a voice in this? Do they just, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, and what's the old saying? If you give 17 prosecutors unlimited resources, they're going to find a crime
right
somewhere. But ironically, in the end, Mueller had to go before Congress, if you remember, and admit he had no crime. So 2 years, millions and millions of dollars, and you got nothing?
Yeah.
Basically, you got nothing to go after right. him on, talking about Trump on the Russia investigation. Anyway, the legal news there is that that case in Florida, the federal court case, about the
documents
has been dismissed. All right, let's talk about what happened on Saturday. Fred, give us the most everybody knows what you're going to tell us, but go ahead and set the stage because I want to talk to Chuck about a lot of the questions that we all have.
Yeah, unless you've been away from radio and TV all weekend, Raleigh, Pennsylvania, Saturday afternoon. Trump is about 7 or 8 minutes into a speech. He is turned to the right. He's pointing to a graphic, I believe, of illegal immigrants. And all of a sudden, if you were watching, you heard pop, pop, pop. President Trump grabs his ear and immediately falls to the floor, and then Secret Service jump on top of him. So obviously what we know from there, that the president literally could have been killed if he had moved a couple of centimeters to his left. It grazed his ear. Secret Service moves in. They get him off the stage. We've now seen that picture. He puts his fist in the air and cries, you know, fight. And they take
American
him off.
American
flag behind him. I think that image has been just burned in our minds now. Very minor injury for the president. Unfortunately, one of the spectators in the stands right behind him was killed in that, and two others were injured. We now know the shooter was on top, and this is a big part of the story. The shooter was on top of a building just 150 yards away. And that is being talked about a whole lot even this morning. How did this happen? Why was there somebody not watching that building, not on top of that building, that could have seen this guy? There is talk that local police were warned by one of the Trump fans in the audience, hey, there's somebody up on that roof. You better be careful about that. But this person who has now been killed, was killed, apparently was able to make it up there. So that's where we are this morning. Trump himself, there were speeches by Biden on the weekend that we have to tone things down. Trump flew to Milwaukee for the start of the convention, Republican convention, which opens today in Milwaukee. And apparently we had just found out he's going to make the announcement on his vice president sometime this afternoon.
Yeah.
So a whole pile going on.
Okay, Chuck, again, what is your... have you ever worked anything like what we're talking about here, a presidential visit to...
I've had the opportunity to serve on Vice President, at the time, Vice President Biden, and the commanding general of the U.S. Army was Lloyd Austin. As we know now, Mr. Austin is now the Secretary of Defense, and Biden is our current president. But when they came to Iraq in December of 2011 for the formal withdrawal of U.S. troops, I was already stationed over there with the Department of State doing dignitary protection, and they came, so I got to participate in that event and serve on his protective detail for the day that he was in town.
So you've done this kind of thing. By this kind of thing, I mean where a foreign dignitary or a president or somebody needs multi layers of protection.
Yes, sir. Okay. So when I was assigned overseas, our primary responsibility was to provide protection or security for our U.S. dignitaries who serve overseas, our U.S. ambassadors, our consulate generals.
Gotcha.
And all those that work in those facilities are foreign security officials.
All right. Tell us, go through, if you can, just briefly, the steps that a Secret Service would take who are securing a place that a president's going to have a rally like Trump.
So the first thing you would see would be an advancement team or advance team that would go to the location. These are identified weeks in advance. They know where they're going. They send a team out. The team consists of multiple individuals who are going to look at every advantage point. They're going to do a threat assessment of the location. This one obviously is of a more concern because it was outside. So you're going to get a proper layout. You're going to get diagrams. You're going to get adjacent buildings. You're going to see where your threat may be, where elevation is involved, where they could reach out and touch your principal, the one that you're responsible for protecting. And when you bring in this threat assessment, when you bring it back in-house and you sit down and people are looking at it, then you're going to see and identify what additional resources that you may need. And I think Fred referenced that earlier, that it's not uncommon that in these type of events that you have to lean on local law enforcement, that may be your local police department, your sheriff's department, or your state police.
And I'm looking at a CNN article right now that says the U.S. Secret Service did not sweep the building from which the shooter in Saturday's attempted assassination was perched, but instead leaned on local law enforcement to conduct security at that location. That seems weird to me, strange.
Well, Not necessarily, okay. Because again, with any event, you have a limited amount of resources. Now, whether some people say that's 150 yards out or 500 yards out or a mile out. So it seems to me from what we know now is that they were focused on the bubble. And the bubble is that immediate area around your principal that you're responsible for protecting. That's where they put all their resources to. Now, when that advance was done, it should have identified mm-hmm. this building that was less than 150 yards away. And I looked at a diagram that I was able to get off the news, and you clearly see the building off to the right. Oh. And you would clearly identify it as a threat because it gives an elevated perch or a position where someone can reach out and touch the president or your principal. And
that's important because if you're in an elevated spot, you're not – forgive me for being crude as I say this. You don't have to shoot through people to get to your target. You're up above the crowd, and you have a better line of sight.
It's not obstructed.
Okay.
So that would be the advantage point. You want the advantage point. You don't want them to have it.
Okay. So to review, what you've said is you have Secret Service on a visit like this where it's outdoors. You have Secret Service, and we can talk later about, you know, do we need more Secret Service for our leading presidential candidates? Seems to me, yes, that's the answer. That is an answer. However, so you have those people, and then they to use a crude way of saying it, they farm out the security on the secondary level to like the sheriff's department or a local police department or maybe the state police.
That's
correct.
I don't know,
right? I don't know. But this situation that happened on Saturday just is unbelievable. I think to the average person out there going, how in the world does a shooter get on a roof of a building within 150 yards with a clear shot of the president? Why? I know you can't answer these questions necessarily because you don't know all the details, but are you not asking the same
absolutely.
Thing?
Absolutely. Your first question is, how did this happen? And there was obviously a breakdown in communication. There was a breakdown in planning. Because even at this advance, you identified that building was going to be covered by a support person or personnel or department. I would have expected that prior to the event that building would have been locked down and any access to the roof would have been denied. So if there was a roof hatch, it would have been locked and secured prior to the visit so that no one could get up there just prior to.
Is that how he got up there? How did he get up there? Do you know?
I do not know.
You guys know? Is it a ladder?
I understand there was a ladder.
See, all that should have been removed.
To Chuck's point, what the Secret Service is saying over the weekend, they were responsible for the primary, what you call the bubble. What the police are saying this morning, the local police, local sheriff's office was responsible for the area beyond that, where this building was. That's what they're saying. But what they're saying this morning is Secret Service is saying wasn't our responsibility. That building was in an area that wasn't our responsibility. The local police are saying, at least one spokesman is saying, the Secret Service were in charge of all security. They didn't tell us that we should secure that building. And of course, another part of the story is BBC does the interview with one of these locals who came out to the rally. He said to the local police, I see some guy up on the roof of that building. You better get eyes on him and do something about that. And he said he was rebuffed. In other words, who cares? Now, the truth of all of this will come out in the investigation. But it sounds to me like point finger back at this moment.
The ultimate responsibility of Mr. Trump's security and safety falls on the Secret Service, period. Now, that doesn't mean that they had to physically be the one on that building, but they are responsible that that building was safe and secure and covered. Mm-hmm. So that should have been a designated. It's anyone with any kind of experience or training, when you look at the overview, you would identify that immediately as a threat. So they should have made sure that someone was there. And then prior to his arrival, you have a command post. They had a command post there on ground.
Yeah.
So they could have communicated with everybody to see that everybody was in position prior to his arrival. And they would have known that had it been a local officer that should have been there, was or was not on his post.
Yeah, because, you again, Secret Service, which is an esteemed agency with a, you know, long history of excellence, I guess you could say. So, I mean, these are the creme de la creme of their profession. And you're thinking, somebody, what, even at the event itself, at the moment, prior to the president even getting on stage, you're thinking, with these guys, they're looking around going, wait a minute, hold on. Who's over there? Who's securing that building over there? I don't see anybody over there. You know what I'm saying? Seemed like it would have eyeballed that. Now, I know, you know, Secret Service, they're not superhuman. They're human like we are. They make mistakes. They're fallible, but they can't make mistakes. Secret Service can't make mistakes. And in this case, it just looks bad.
Well, when it comes to this type of protection, no, you can't make a mistake. And, you know, you have to be right every single time. And in this event, they weren't. There was mistakes made.
If you're Trump, he's not going to say this out loud, I don't think, but I'm thinking I can't trust these guys anymore.
Well, I think collectively there was some faults. There was breakdown somewhere along this whole process of planning and execution. I think you can look at it, though, and individually, I think you will see some individuals who stepped up and did their job and did it well and their responsibility and put themselves where they needed to be and in a place of being vulnerable mm-hmm. to protect the former president. But someone is going to be held accountable.
I just got shot in the ear.
Yes.
I mean, I'm maybe y'all don't feel that way, but if I'm Trump, I'm thinking I'm not going to criticize the Secret Service out in the open. But behind closed doors, I'm going, my head was just about blown off. And who's responsible for protecting me? Secret Service.
How does this happen?
And they
How did this happen?
And they didn't. And could it happen next week?
Hey, and listen, if you're Robert F. Kennedy Jr.,
right.
He has no Secret Service protection. I know he's not one of the two major right. candidates right now, but he's been asking for Secret Service protection for the last 6 months to a year, and he's been told no. There are some crazies out there.
Also, if I'm Trump, this is just me. There's no more outdoor rallies. Okay. It's too risky, and you can do them indoor. You can do them at arenas, you know, where they're more secure.
That would be safer, right? Indoor arenas.
It would be, because they're going to sanitize the arena,
yeah,
and then they're going to control who comes in,
yeah.
And each individual that comes in will be screened.
Yeah, but these open air rallies, it's a wonder this kind of thing hadn't happened before. But to have a clear shot and
they may put up some type of ballistic barricade in between him and those attending. And
you know, they have the Pope Mobile, right? The Pope Mobile, which protects the Pope from gunshots. And like you said, I remember when President Trump had his inauguration, and remember he was at the Lincoln Memorial, mm-hmm. and they were doing I forgot what was it? They were a parade or whatever. He was observing. Anyway, it was about the inauguration. It was a celebration and everything like that. He was behind protected, what do you call it, bulletproof glass. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
Do y'all remember that? And so just maybe he'll use that in the future. I don't know if he does any more outdoor rallies, but I wouldn't if I were him. I would just do indoor rallies and – plus, I don't even know that rallies are necessary anymore. People going to vote for who they're going to vote for, pretty much. You know what I'm saying?
It drives excitement for your candidate. Well, I don't know how much excitement President Biden's driving, but On the other side, Trump gets huge crowds.
We'll be back momentarily. Stay with us.
A recent study reports that the rapidly declining global birth rate will lead to a major population crisis if birth rates continue to decline. Their massive support for Planned Parenthood is all part of their plan. While we may feel hopeless in the constant attack on life, there is an amazing way to fight back. When they shout abortion, we shout life. Preborn is leading the way. Every day, their network rescues 200 babies. You see, when a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears the heartbeat, a baby's chance at life doubles. The ultrasound is the secret weapon that joins a mother's heart to her child. Preborn provides ultrasounds for clinics in the highest abortion areas. Can we join hands nationwide for life? One ultrasound is just $28, but any gift will help. $5,000 will underwrite ultrasounds for the entire network for a day. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@AFR.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at AFR.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim Wildman, Fred Jackson, Ed Battagliano, and in studio with us is Chuck Bunn. Chuck is Assistant Director of Security Operations for us here at our ministry, but he served in Iraq and served in Iraq as a, what do you call it?
Protective Security Specialist with the State Department.
And so, and has experience in police work and SWAT teams and all kind. He understands securing an area for a something like a presidential visit. So I just wanted to give your credentials again real quick. I want to ask you something because you said like you were in charge. Were you in charge or you were part of the team when Biden visited Iraq in 2011? Is that what you said?
Yes, sir, I was part of the team. Yes.
And who else came?
Lloyd Austin was the commanding general of the U.S. Army at the time, and he was responsible for the drawdown and withdrawal of U.S. troops in Iraq.
Right, okay. So I want to ask you about what happened Saturday with respect to President Trump being taken off the stage and then moved to the car and then onto the hospital. What is the role of those agents that swarm the president? I mean, what are they supposed to do? How does that work?
Well, they responded by providing a body bunker for the president to put a shield around him.
Literally supposed to take a bullet if they have to, right?
Absolutely. And then immediately get off the X. The X is the danger zone, the spot that where the threat occurred, and it was drilled into us during training, during scenarios, that whenever an event occurred, whether it be while in a vehicle moving or while be moving on foot from venue to venue, or in this case, as Mr. Trump was up there speaking, then you grab the principal and you get off the X as soon as possible. I think.
But he's 6'2", 240.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know what he's 240. He says he's 215, but I'm just not buying that one. But anyway,
he's a big guy.
He's a big guy. Yes. He's a big guy. Trump is six. He is 6'2", 6'3", and he's probably just looking at him. I'm gonna say he's 250, something like that. He's a big fella. And how do you handle something like that? Well,
what happened different in this situation is when Mr. Trump went all the way to the ground, and in a lot of instances, the person will not go all the way down. They'll be hunkered down or even bent over, which allows you to grab a hold of them and guide them and steer them in the direction you would want to go, and you're pushing them, if you will.
You got several of these agents trying to manhandle him to get him off the stage, I guess get him into a secure location, right?
Right, because your concern is of a secondary threat. Had in this event there had been a secondary shooter.
And why did they let him raise his head?
They shouldn't
that
have.
Was
Yeah. Huh? They should have removed him quicker. They will conduct, and they have already began, AAR, which is an after action review that agencies do after every event. Not necessarily just when they go bad, but after every one, because they're never perfect. There's always room for improvement. And unfortunately, on this one, there were several failures.
I put some of that responsibility, too, on President Trump. And I know it's the heat of the moment, so to speak, but when Secret Service is trying to get you off the stage and they're manhandling you, you don't raise your head above theirs, above their shoulder level.
There's kind of a shock at the moment. To me, Secret Service, those are the ones who are trained. They're trained for these kinds of situations. President Trump, I was still trying to communicate with the crowd. It seems to me that trained Secret Service should not have allowed him to do what he wanted to do. If he had said, no, I'm finishing my speech, no, sir, Mr. President, you cannot. So I'm guessing President Trump was kind of in shock, maybe not physically, but mentally and emotionally. He wanted to get back and communicate with the audience. That's what I'm
guessing. Well, he did.
Yeah. And that picture is going to be iconic for our lifetimes and beyond.
Fight, fight, fight.
Yeah, with his hand raised, blood coming down off the side of his face with the American flag in the background.
They'll be looking at that in 100 years from now in pictures of our country's history.
Right.
But I was just I was surprised, given that, you know, you hear that they're supposed to take this guy or whoever the president is, and that anyway. But you know what? Like you're saying, you can. It's different doing trial runs, and then this something like this actually happened, and you're talking about a big man right there. There's been some discussion about, you know, one of these Secret Service agents that looked to me like a 5'3" woman.
I wanted to ask that because
you're going to be the sexist here?
No. Okay. Well, I'm going to couch this in a way that is hopefully doesn't sound sexist.
Okay.
Kim Cheadle, who is the director of the United States Secret Service, she has said in the aftermath, and then
we have audio.
Okay. All right. Go ahead, Fred.
She has talked about her priority as head of the Secret Service, and you have a listen to what she had to say. Cut number four.
We need to attract diverse candidates and ensure that we are developing and giving opportunities to everybody in our workforce, and particularly women.
All right. So the question I wanted to ask was not that women should not be able to work in the Secret Service. They love their country just as much as men do. They want to participate. But physically, unless you have a woman who's as tall as these tall agents, you want to protect form that bubble, and a shorter woman's not going to be able to give protection to the head of somebody the size of Trump. There is some sexism involved in that, but I'm just talking about biological facts here.
I did get an opportunity to serve with some females when I was overseas. They were a minority. There were only a few of them. Very capable. They were experienced. They had to take the same test that I did when it came to the PT test and the weapons qualifications course. But there are many different roles in the protective service detail. So just because one may not be, not everybody was a driver. Not everybody was a sniper. So you got different skill sets. So maybe that's one thing they should look at is evaluate.
I don't think a 6'9" guy can fit in a fighter jet to be a pilot.
Yeah. Sure. I understand.
My point is not everybody's physically capable of doing a job that is assigned to them, despite the fact that they may be excellent otherwise. So in a situation like this, seems to me, and I think that those responsible for bodyguarding the president should be, I'm talking about the ones in the who formed, not office people or whatever, even officers on the ground who have some other responsibilities, could be female. But if you have somebody, those five or six who are getting him off the stage, in this case, They need to be big, husky dudes. And look like a few of them were, you right. know what I'm saying, who can have the strength to
manhandle a shocked human being, someone who's in shock.
Yes, yes, and should be tall enough to also protect somebody who's. So when I saw the woman there, I'm thinking she's like to me, she's 5'3", 5'4". She's not. She may be a wonderful agent, but she's not physically tall enough to be a part of protecting the president. That's just what I thought when I was watching. That's how I wanted to watch.
And that could be for a male or a female. If they're not physically right. able yeah. to do oh, the yeah. to do yeah. the job, then may be another role for them. That's right.
Chuck's trying to stay out of trouble here, it sounds yeah. like to me. Yeah. Anyone who wants to serve and protect the president or others, my hat's off to them. Male or female, doesn't matter. So,
but I got a problem with her diversity hiring policy there, because that's she's doing, what do you call it, DEI?
Yes.
Yeah.
She's doing, we got to have a certain percentage of these workers be so-and-so category, female. No, for the Secret Service, you take the best of the best.
Right. Like Chuck said, you got to pass all the tests.
Doesn't matter.
When I went through,
I set a quota.
Right.
When I went through training, I lost 4 roommates during that time because of a failure in that training sequence. You can go to the range and have a bad day. You may be an excellent shot, but you have one bad day at the range, you're on a plane ticket back home.
Because you can't afford to have a bad day when you're in the Secret yeah. Service.
So I lost one due to he had a personality conflict with instructors. Again, you're in a tight group working together. You got to be able to get along with each other, articulate if you have any concerns, but then be on board and complete the mission.
Yeah.
You have any other questions, Fred?
No. I think, you know, it's going to be investigated. President Biden said they're going to have an independent investigation as to what happened there. I think what is recognized, something went very wrong. Somebody had to be responsible for not just the security of the primary area, but certainly that building within 150 yards of the president. Something went wrong. We'll have to find out if they actually do an honest investigation.
What would keep me up if I was responsible for the oversight of what occurred this weekend was that a 20-year-old with no experience, from what we know now, yeah. not prior military,
right.
was able to come within 150 yards of the president or former president.
You get a clear shot.
And was able right. to reach out and literally touch him.
Yes.
With now, an AR-15, yeah. didn't he have, he had a...
It's my understanding it was a rifle and his iron sights. I don't know any more than that, but that's what I've heard. But my point is, if this would have been a collective group of individuals with some kind of training and some kind of planning,
it'd have been a massacre.
The discussion today would have been completely different.
That's a good point. If yeah. you had professionals, and this goes back to the border issue, that we have really no idea who has come across that border. FBI Director Christopher Wray has said all kinds of red flags that there are real dangers in terms of who's in our country. But to your point, well-trained,
experienced, maybe not professionals, people. But experienced.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Chuck. Appreciate it. That's Chuck Bond joining us to talk about what happened on Saturday from a police/law enforcement perspective. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim with Ed and Fred. Two big stories right now, other than obviously the aftermath of the attempted assassination on Saturday of President Trump that we were discussing. One is the federal court case in Florida having to do with the classified documents at Mar-a-Lago has been thrown out, has been dismissed by Judge Cannon, the federal judge there, a Trump appointee.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, Jonathan Turley is a law professor at George Washington Law School and is a frequent contributor into the media, especially right. Fox. He said that case, the documents case, the Mar-a-Lago case is how we typically refer to it, probably was the most dangerous criminally that the president was facing, and now that's been tossed out.
Yeah, it's tossed out. So that's a big story there. And then secondly, sometime today, President Trump will name his vice presidential choice.
Mm-hmm.
That's been a pretty good secret. His team's been able to.
Yeah, a lot of names keep being mentioned.
Who's your? Okay, who would be your choice? I only asked that question because I want to answer it myself.
Yeah, well, I think Marco Rubio has been on the short list, not necessarily President Trump's short list, but the short list everybody's talking about. He brings a lot to the table.
Yeah.
That he can bring. Now, some question about Trump's primary residence is in Florida,
right,
and you got a Florida senator. So some people talk about that. Governor Burgum also talked about a lot, and also Vivek Ramaswamy has also been talked about. But you know what? Donald Trump being Donald Trump, it could be somebody that's not on anybody's radar.
Ed, you want to answer the question?
Yes, I will. I would be okay with Marco Rubio. I think he's stronger on social issues than some of the candidates who have been named. He has had some immigration questions on some of his proposals.
He's not legal?
No. Wasn't that with the Gang of Eight? So I would be okay with Marco Rubio. I would like Tim Scott. I think Tim Scott, for me, checks all the boxes. I don't particularly care for J.D. Vance. I don't think he's experienced enough. His views have not been tested. I don't know what his views are on some of the social conservative
issues. He was a serious never-Trumper.
And he was, a very serious
J.D. Vance I'm talking about. Now, he converted over. But
right.
I'm just saying he was.
I don't think he's got enough experience.
He's a first-time senator from Ohio.
Vivek Ramaswamy, I don't think he has
name.
Enough. I do like saying his name. I don't think has enough experience to be a vice presidential candidate. I wouldn't mind seeing him in some sort of office for a Trump administration. Tulsi Gabbard has a lot of common sense, but I think some of her social issues.
She was a Democrat not too long ago.
I'm like everybody else. I'm going to wait and see. I think you've said this, but you can speak for yourself.
Uh-huh.
I think we really need a good, solid Christian as the number two.
Please.
So to keep the Republican Party and the Trump administration, if he were to win, tethered to conservative ideals and Judeo-Christian values. And when President Trump leaves office, this would be his second term, he would not be able to run again, not for president,
he would have a
strong candidate going forward.
Yeah.
Can you guys name one that fits that criteria?
I like Tim Scott.
Tim Scott.
And then Marco Rubio probably second.
Okay.
From the group that's been bannered about.
Okay.
If you're asking me to pick among the four that have been rumored to be the final four,
the shortlist, yeah,
that would include Doug Burgum.
Yep.
The governor of, is he the sitting governor or is he the former governor?
No, sitting.
Okay, sitting governor. Yeah. Sitting guy, and he's basically a businessman.
Yes,
he's
successful.
He's got a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very successful businessman. He's governor of North Dakota. Then you've got J.D. Vance, the freshman senator from
Ohio.
Then you've got Tim Scott. Would you guys say he's been in the final four?
I'm not sure if
maybe
his name has been kicked around. I don't know if he's made
lately,
the final
though.
Four, but not lately.
Not lately. He's a senator from South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Marco Rubio, the veteran senator from the state of Florida. Am I missing one more that's been like?
Yes, governor of Virginia.
Oh, Glenn Youngkin. Okay.
And he's kind of been the opposite of Tim Scott. Tim Scott is like settled into the background, but Glenn Youngkin has kind of shot up into
his star has been rising.
All right. So among those, that group of people, and they're all fine people and all intelligent people and articulate, that the ones I've just described that I've been able to hear. However, for me personally, an agreement with you, Ed, it would be wonderful if we could see somebody in the vice that Trump would pick who would be from a conservative Christian, worldview perspective. That would give me a better comfort level going forward. Because that person will have the ear, and that's a terrible thing to say. I didn't mean to say that, of President Trump. Forgive me, that was tacky, but I didn't mean it. I did not intend to. I did not intend to use a pun there. Excuse me.
There's one more name, and I know she's not.
Let me have my pick, Fred, please.
Okay.
What's your pick? Ed knows I like to share my heart.
Yes. Okay.
Fred?
Sure.
Ed wants me to share my heart.
I want you to share your heart.
Don't you love when
Christians? The world wants you.
I make fun of that because Christians always say, I want to share my heart. Share my heart means I want to tell you what I think about it, and you can't question me.
Because you're sharing your heart.
Because it's coming from my heart. So if you got anything negative to say about what I said, it comes from my heart, and you're hurting my heart.
Mm-hmm.
So all those names being bandied around, of course, it's not going to make any difference because Trump's the one who picks guy, and today is his day. He said he's going to announce, but I think I would. Marco Rubio, the senator from Florida, would make me the happiest.
Yeah,
of all those people, because he is a seasoned senator with a lot of experience. He's still young enough to carry on after President Trump finishes his. Assuming he wins. And he's also well respected in conservative circles. And he's a Christian.
Right.
He's smart. And he yes, he has some negative things in his past, but they all do.
Right.
I'm not talking about moral things. I'm talking about places where we would say, well, we disagree with him on the Gang of Eight on the immigration thing back a few years ago. Think was a mistake on his part, but overall his career is very commendable from a conservative point of view. I'm talking about Marco Rubio. So that would make me the happiest. Now, if you're going to think outside the box, so to speak, out of those four names, Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida, who is speaking at the Republican National Convention.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's going to happen because of it's just not going to happen for multiple reasons, probably. But that would rock the world for people because he was kind of the second choice.
Right.
If you surveyed Trump supporters in the Republican primary, they would say, oh, well, I support Donald Trump first. But if you had to ask me who I would vote for second, it would be Governor DeSantis of Florida. But I think that's fantasy world stuff because I don't think that's going to happen. Governor of Florida has endorsed President Trump after he dropped out of the race, and he's speaking at the Republican convention, and I'm sure he will reinforce that endorsement. Now, the other option, another name that's been bandied around is perhaps Nikki Haley, the former governor of South Carolina, who is but I haven't heard her. That would be another outside the box type choice, Fred.
Yeah, and I don't see that. The chemistry between those two during the primary was just so toxic.
Bird brain.
Yeah, it was so, and she was very critical.
She wasn't even invited until recently, right?
Just this
to the
week.
Convention.
Well, she released her delegates on Friday, but then over the weekend we learned she's going to have a speaking spot tomorrow night at the convention.
Oh, you were going to say. Yes. Who's your dark horse candidate?
Well,
VP.
I don't think she's interested, but I really like her, Sarah Huckabee Sanders. She's a chip off the old block.
Yeah.
I like her dad. I like the way he handles himself.
Right.
And she is much the same. She's so far been a great...
Yeah, but she's a freshman governor.
Yeah, she's been a great governor, though.
Oh, I agree, but 2 years she's...
But she's got so much experience with Donald Trump, too. She was his White House spokesperson.
Right. Yeah.
For so long, she knows the guy.
You know, Glenn Youngkin is just a first-term governor in Virginia.
That's true. But yeah. He can't run a second time either.
Right. You know, I'm just saying in terms
yeah. of... Yeah, no, you're right. Experience. You're right about that. And yeah. Glenn Youngkin, he was the other one. From what I know of him, I would be happy with him.
Oh, yeah.
He won the governorship in a purple to blue state. Yeah.
And look what he's done there. Yeah. My goodness.
I mean,
he's pretty fearless.
I don't know if Trump would pick him, though. You know why? He's 3 inches taller.
Is he 3 inches taller
than Donald Trump? That dude can dunk on Trump.
Yeah.
He's 6'2".
Trump's a tall guy.
Trump's probably 6'2", 6'3". Glenn Youngkin looked to me like he was like 6'6", because there was a picture of him side by side.
Yeah.
So.
But any of the names we've mentioned,
yeah,
I would love to see in a debate with Kamala Harris, because I think they would wipe the floor.
I think that's a real possibility. Any of those folks are articulate enough. Now, yeah. I will say this. I wouldn't underestimate Kamala Harris I know you guys are
going to talk. Hold on. Laughing. Hold on a second.
I wouldn't underestimate her in a debate setting.
Yeah.
She really is. She's not dumb. She's been accused of being that.
Right.
Her public speaking is atrocious in terms of...
You think she would share her heart?
I think she would share her heart. I think she has the capability of throwing a lot of statistics and doing enough debate prep. You wouldn't have a walkover. That's... I know people judge her on her word salads, but...
Yeah, Vice President Harris, what did you do to secure the border?
Oh, no, I didn't say she'd have good answers in terms of content, but she would not be a pushover, let me put it this way. I've disappointed you again, Evan I. Tim.
I wish you wouldn't have shared your heart. About Kamala, I can't get that out of my mind now. Word salad, Kamala Harris. All right, we'll see. We're going to get some Thousand Island... and then we'll be back in 5 minutes.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.